Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Welcome to the show. Today we have Randy Ginsberg. He is an entrepreneur and author from New York who has written the book Adversity to Advantage. It focuses on how the problems in our lives can help us build a stronger personality and become a more successful human. It's a great book and my pleasure to have him on the show. Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast.
Thanks, Sam. I'm very happy to be here.
Cool. So I'd like to have a bit of an introduction to my guest. So can you give me like your life story just very quickly in like 3 minutes?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in a small suburb of New York, and I was always a very creative kid. I was very entrepreneurial and scrappy. I was the type to do lemonade stands and door-to-door snow shoveling and sell Snapples and sodas out of my locker at school. And that really set the tone for me wanting to become an entrepreneur when I grew up. And in my middle school years, and this is what really prompted the idea for the book, I faced a lot of childhood bullying. And because I was a bit different, I looked very different. I had small, greasy blonde hair, buck teeth, acne, just any appearance, skinny appearance wise, just I was an easy target. And so this was something that had built up and over the years had took a pretty profound toll on my mental and physical health. And I was avoiding school. I was a big athlete and was avoiding practices and games that I usually loved because I didn't want to see people. And then in my senior year of high school, I started my first business, more serious business, buying and selling sneakers and high-end pieces of clothing on the internet. And this started with buying one pair on Facebook and getting a loan from my parents for $150, and they sat for 2 months, and my parents were like, just sell the damn things already. Like, why did we give you this money? And eventually I flipped it, and then with the pair that I flipped it with, I bought two more pair, and then one of those pair I traded up, and I just continued to snowball this until I had around $1,000, and I then started buying, like anything you buy in bulk, I bought six pairs and then got them for a cheaper price and continued to flip those. And over the course of 3 years, it really turned into a very profitable business and it became my identity. And that was a real coping mechanism for me to escape the bullying and focus on something more meaningful. That was in high school. I then went to study at Syracuse University, a college in New York, where I majored in entrepreneurship and marketing. And during my last year at Syracuse, I started working on the book, the title that you just mentioned, Adversity to Advantage, How to Overcome Bullying and Find Entrepreneurial Success. So for the last year and a half, I've spent my time interviewing and researching a highly diverse group of successful entrepreneurs, all who were bullied as kids, in an attempt to see how these experiences that we conventionally think are very negative actually were positives in their lives and helped teach them really valuable lessons and growth mindsets and the one things that propelled them into entrepreneurial success. So the book launched in July. And since then, I've been doing a lot of press and speaking and a little bit of coaching. And now we're here.
Cool. Yeah, that's nice. Sorry to hear about your bullying. I mean,
no worries.
So as in some people say, like they can become entrepreneurs much later without ever doing stuff when they're young. But do you know why it was that you're interested to be an entrepreneur so young then?
So I think there's a big debate over entrepreneurship, whether entrepreneurial skill is something that's innate, something that you're born with, or if that's something that you develop over time along your life's journey and it's affected by all the different events in your external environment. And for me, I think it was a mix of both. So I was always, like I said, very scrappy and had a good sense of business. But part of the reason I wanted to become an entrepreneur was because of the bullying. I think it gave me a chip on my shoulder. It gave me a desire to prove myself and a desire for control over my own life and wanting to kind of go against the grain, which was something that I'd always done. Because entrepreneurship is, of course, not the most profitable. It can be, but if you're chasing money, you probably should be in another career path. It's not the most profitable. It's not the most financially stable. It's pretty ambiguous. And that's not for everyone. But the idea of risk and challenge has always been something that I've welcomed on into my life. And I think that that became so relevant and so important to me after having gone through the bullying. So I think that had a pretty profound impact as well.
So when you first started getting bullied, then it was just like kids being kids.
Yeah, it was kids being kids at first. And then it was started to just pick up. It was more physical, obviously cyberbullying. I grew up in the age like you with a lot of technology. And older days, you could leave school and you go home and you do whatever you want and you don't see the kids till the next day. Cyberbullying, you're never really escaped. You know, there's an avenue to you at all times. And it started with initially kids being kids, and it picked up to be a bit more intense, more gradual over time, and carried on for a few years. And once you go through that and your guard's already let down and you develop anxiety and depression, you're more self-conscious, it's things that might not initially have gotten to you already start to seem a bit worse. So it's just a gradual process that was trending downward.
Wow, that's not very nice at all. Yeah, I haven't really experienced much cyberbullying, but I've never been hugely active on kind of things. And I guess I was a bit old by the time Facebook became a thing.
As technology has developed, so like even kids who are just growing up, like I still was on the forefront of Facebook, Instagram. Those came out towards when I was in the middle. Facebook was like when the end of middle school, but Instagram and Snapchat were much later. For kids growing up with it now, I have like cousins who are 7 with iPhones on Snapchat and Instagram. That's what I think really is going to give it 5-10 years. It's going to have a big effect on a lot of people.
Definitely. I mean, I remember when I was at college, my friend's little sister's Facebook was probably like pretty big. She was just like completely addicted to it. Just couldn't get off it the whole time. You're like, but there's a world outside. Like, what are you doing? Like, it really doesn't matter. You won't even talk to these people in 5 years' time. Like, you're just like, this is stupid.
Yeah, 100%. And there's all this hype over likes and comments. There's divining the self-worth. And yeah, there's a lot of issues in that I find with starting kids too young.
Yeah. Right. Can you give an example of what cyberbullying would be exactly? Is in people, how do you get isolated on cyberbullying, or how do you feel?
It could literally come over someone just texting you like, hey, you suck, you're a loser, whatever. Or you could be on Facebook and you post a picture and there's a bunch of comments of people saying mean things. It could be on Instagram, there's a bunch of comments on people saying mean things. It could be someone posting a video about you, directing you and putting that out into their social sphere and having other people like and comment on it. It's just more of a direct avenue, and things like you say something in words and verbal in-person confrontation and you could always remember the words, but the words go away. You post something online
it's always there
to stay, and anyone who crosses. Exactly. So
sounds,
I think,
awful.
That's awful. When you think about it, it could be bad.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, I mean, I thought they were supposed to be getting better at like dealing with cyberbullying stuff. Were there ways to report things back then?
Yeah, there are ways to report things, but it's more of just getting.
Yeah, it still
can. You know what I'm, like, there's not going to be a Facebook police that's going to say, like, hey, stop bullying, like, delete the comment, and then they can post it again or whatever. But I know Instagram and a bunch of like governmental officials and mental health officials and everyone else are working together to try to put some better like AI processes in place that can better detect like hate language and things like that.
Interesting. Okay, cool. And then you said you got into starting your business, and then that helped you a lot.
Yeah.
So, the bullying was still all going on at the same time when you first started it, you're like getting the sneakers and things. But then it was kind of social credit from having cool sneakers and like being someone that's sort of making money, sort of suddenly made people kind of find you like a bit more interesting, or what changed?
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily social credit in a sense, because I would wear like things that were against the norm. I would wear sneakers that were against the norm. So I still honestly sometimes would get bullied because of what I was wearing, but it was more that it gave me one, an outlet, just like after school, instead of going on Facebook and doing all this, I was going on Facebook and looking at sneakers. I was on different websites, on Soul Collector, which is another blog, or these different blogs, and looking at sneakers. I was talking to people and making business deals, but also just the making the money, the finding success was obviously something that in finding success in business was something I enjoyed, but that also gave me the confidence to say, hey, I did this from scratch. Like I really did something. And when you carry yourself better and you have a bit more self-esteem, you project that and people start to see you as what you actually are. And so I think the whole process of just starting the business and using it as a mechanism and building up my own confidence then earned me the respect from other people. And it also just stopped mattering to me.
Cool. Okay. And then, so you went on to your university degree. And so it was just whilst you sort of had the idea for the book about how it helps you, you thought you'd sort of just do some more research behind it?
Yeah. So I was at an entrepreneurship conference in New York City, actually. And I was meeting all these incredible people, some who had just had ideas and some who had started businesses and raised $1 million of funding and had successful exits all across the board. And I was thinking what made them decide to pursue the path of entrepreneurship as well. Like the question you asked me, what made them so interested in it? And so I would hear all their answers and we would talk about it. And I realized for me that, like I told you, it was the bullying. And so I immediately thought, oh, well, are there any other successful entrepreneurs, people who have already done it, people who have exited, who have went through the same experiences, and how has it helped them? And that was my initial thought and inquiry. And then I started to do research. And one of the first pieces of like foundational research for my book came from a psychologist named Ellen DeLara, who happened to, she was a teacher, researcher, psychologist, and author. And she was a professor at my university. So I had an easy access to her. And in one of her own independent studies, she interviewed and studied 900 people, ages 18 to 65 from all walks of life, socioeconomic backgrounds, races, just different professions, everything, really diverse group of people. And they had all been bullied as kids. And what she found was that nearly 50% of them reported that the bullying actually had a positive effect on their adult lives. And the way that it did affect their lives, some of the reasons they gave were resiliency. So just never backing down from adversity and being able to face any challenge that got in their way. It made them more independent and resilient. And then it helped them with their empathy. So being able to be more empathetic and relate with people and build their emotional intelligence. Another way was it affected their morality, which kind of falls into this emotional intelligence idea of the idea of wanting to treat people the way that they wanted to be treated and knowing that had they been treated poorly, they would never want to treat someone else like that. And then the last one was the idea of goal attainment. So having the chip on their shoulder, having the desire to prove themselves and the desire to work hard to make something of themselves, considering previously they had been told that they would never amount to anything. And so these were all effects that came from the bullying, but also translated very well into entrepreneurial success and just professional success as a whole. And so once I had this kind of framework of ways that it had helped people of all professions become better adults, I then looked for that in the entrepreneurs who I interviewed. So I went and interviewed and studied a bunch of entrepreneurs, and all of these criteria checked out. It helped their resilience and entrepreneurship. You get a thousand no's before you get a yes. You get rejected by investors. You get rejected by speaking events, whatever it is, and needing to just power through that. It helped them in their negotiation skills, their leadership skills, hiring, firing, just dealing with people, because entrepreneurship is such a social profession. And then it also helped them with the drive and the desire to prove themselves and the goal attainment piece. So in the interviews and what I disclosed in the book and the specific stories, it all really came together and solidified. And that was really cool to me. I think when we think of bullying as a whole, we think of it to be naturally and conventionally all negative. And there isn't much research out about the positive.
Definitely. And similarly, you know, like you read David Goggins' book?
I haven't. No, what's that?
Can't Hurt Me. But like he was abused as a child and then bullied and then has his various, like everything just seems to keep on going wrong for him continuously. But then like every single time he just got stronger and stronger and like went on to break like world records and do lots of really cool stuff. And he just had like a really good attitude to growth and like post-traumatic growth kind of thing. And everything he just always saw what he could take from it. And but I think it's partly just the mindset behind how you deal with these things.
And that was a big thing, just training yourself and your mind to be resilient and optimistic. And in the book, there's a lot of different hacks and studies and just mental frameworks that you can try to apply to your own life to think of not just bullying, but any type of adversity as a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Know how to deal with things when they come up.
100%. That's cool. Because I remember reading your book and being like, their new kind of flaw was sort of like, I know you, there's some science behind it, but like you keep on taking out examples of people who are bullied and then become entrepreneurs and sort of saying how this is like a good way. And you sort of, well, how many people were bullied and didn't become entrepreneurs, or how many entrepreneurs were not bullied? So it's not like you haven't got all the other sort of different elements to make like it's a big experiment. Although like, there's definitely people that do have this happen, and like, there's loads of cases. There's like a causal correlation sort of effect kind of thing.
It's more of the fact that this was a way that people have expressing themselves through entrepreneurship or devoting their life to a meaningful project or purpose, whether that was going and starting a nonprofit or working for a nonprofit or then doing the entrepreneurship thing. Just it was more of the idea of dedicating your life and focusing on something that's meaningful to you. And the examples of the people in the book, it was entrepreneurship, but doing that, spending that time and purpose is a way to build your confidence and escape bullying. That was more.
Yeah, that's good. I do like it. And certainly like if you're a parent, like if your kid's getting bullied, it's not like, yes, woohoo, great.
Exactly.
But it's a chance to be like, okay, how can I teach my child to be more resilient? And you can maybe facilitate them having like a better experience out of it as a result and not getting too caught up in it as such.
Like studies have shown that only like 30% of kids will go and seek adult help when they're being bullied. I know for me, I never went to my parents at all, tell them anything about it till I was like 18, 19 years old. And that was by way, this had all passed. It was tough. But like you said, it's just for parents who read it, it's being able to see that if my son is going through this, one, how to look for certain signs that if their kid isn't going to them, how they might be able to pick up on it earlier. And then two, like you said, just if they are verbal and open with it, what tactics and methods can they use to kind of just attack the challenges as they come? And then also if they have any entrepreneurial ideas or interests, how they can leverage those to grow them and become better.
Cool. Can we break into those points? How, as a parent, could I pick up on that earlier?
Yeah, to pick up on it earlier, I think it's very subjective based on the kid. But for me, for example, like I mentioned, I was a huge athlete. I played on all the sports teams. And then the kids who were on the teams were some of the people who were bullying me. So for example, basketball was my favorite sport ever. I couldn't get enough of it, couldn't stop watching it, whatever. But then as the bullying really hit a high, I started faking sick for practice. I started not wanting to go to tournaments. I started not wanting to associate myself with it at all. And so if you're a parent and you see that there's something that your kid really loves or has loved for years, and then they start to stray away from that, then that could be a red flag. Also, just I used to be a good student. My grades dropped significantly. I used to want to go outside more. I stopped wanting to go outside. I started getting more headaches and more stomach aches, some of which were real, some of which were fake. Just picking up on these patterns and behavioral patterns that might seem off the norm, instead of thinking, oh, maybe he's just in a mood, maybe he's trying to dig deeper as well.
Yeah. So what do you think would have happened if your parents had said, oh, you seem to be ill quite a lot, like, are you being bullied or something? What do you think would have then happened?
Again, I think subjective, just because it depends. For me, I was embarrassed and I didn't really have that relationship where I wanted to talk to them. But if they had asked me directly, are you? Like, yeah, I probably would have said something. My issue, and I think a lot of kids, is they don't want the parents to intervene and make it worse. Mm. Like, I knew my parents would be like, oh, if we heard something, we'll go in and we'll tell their mom, whatever. Like, I didn't want them to get involved because I thought it would make it worse. But I know, I think now kids are a bit more, at least from the parents that I've spoken to, they foster that relationship earlier and kids are more inclined to tell them things like that, as long as they know that the parent won't go like crazy and start like turning over all these stones, but as opposed to just working with them individually to try to get over it. I think that's more powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay, and then so how can a parent then help their child if they are being bullied?
Yeah, I think that comes to the idea of like the mindset stuff that we were talking about. So one of the studies that I really like came from a woman named Suzanne Kobasa. She was a researcher at the University of Chicago and in 1979 had a big study on stress hardiness, which is basically the positive response to stressful situations and then the ability to minimize their negative effects. So basically just dealing with stress and resilience and everything that goes along with that. And so her framework that she created was called the three C's. And the first C is challenge. So the idea of resilient people looking at adversity as a challenge, as something to tackle that is going to come up in life, but something that instead of being a life paralyzing, defining event is actually something that we embrace and can grow from. So just framing your mindset to look at adversity in that way. Then the second is commitment, which is about seeking and fulfilling a purpose and just being dedicated to something, whether it's your friends, or your religion, or your studies, or for me, starting a business, just finding a commitment to something tangible or some idea that can help you escape whatever adversity you're going through and help provide some balance into your life. And then the third is personal control. And this is personally my favorite, just that resilient people spend their time and effort focusing on things that are within their control. We tend just as humans to worry so much about these external outside events that are ultimately out of our control. And although they might have big impacts on us, the more you worry about it, nothing more is going to come in your control. So just by thinking about things that you actually are able to make a difference in your own life, that's another great way to form that resilient mindset. And so I think for parents, just since those are pretty basic concepts that I think most kids are able to comprehend, just sitting down with them at a young age, breaking these ideas down with, regardless if it's bullying or anything else, that you're going to come across some tough times in life, but keep these in mind when you want to deal with them. I think one of the three C's is a great example of a framework.
Yeah, that's really useful. Glad I asked the question. Nice. So have there been any other major lessons along these sort of lines that I should be asking about?
Yeah, I mean, there's the book, there's so many studies. I'll even another example of like a framework that comes from the same chapter actually is another framework called 3 P's. This was by Martin. Yeah, 3 P's and 3 C's.
Yeah.
By Martin Seligman, who he's a really famous psychologist. He studied at the University of Pennsylvania, positive psychology, learned optimism. Just the idea of similar to stress hardiness, just being resilient and optimistic. So for the 3 P's, the first one is permanence. And this is the idea that a bad situation will never last forever. So nothing is permanent, that there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. Every storm runs out of rain, all of these quotes that we've grown up hearing, but it's actually true. And so that's really important to keep in mind. Then the second is pervasiveness, which is the belief that a negative experience impacts all avenues of our lives, which isn't the case. For example, if you have a bad relationship with a friend or a girlfriend or whatever, you could say, I can't trust my girlfriend, not I can't trust all girls. So instead of, it's a very subjective situation, but it doesn't affect all avenues. You can't blow it up into a grand generalization. So not letting it affect different areas of your life. And then the third is personalization. So this is very similar to the personal control, but it's just not making anything seem like any external events, not blaming themselves for it, recognizing that they can only control what's personalized and that if something bad that happened that's outside of their control, that's not their fault and that that's something that they just need to accept. So those three also are very powerful.
How would you suggest going around teaching a child? So you just sit down and go, so today we're going to learn about the 3 P's, or is it sort of like when something comes up, you go, oh, have you thought about like how permanent this is and like ask the right questions?
I use an event as an example. So, you know, like this is could be extreme for some people, but like death is something that's going to come up in all of our lives at some point. So I guess if a kid, let's say a grandparent passes, or it doesn't need to be death, but any type of like, if there's a tree falls on the car and it's in the driveway, just these things that come up in life, and there's an event that you can tie that to. And then that's the time where you sit down with your son or daughter and you say, hey, this just happened. And it's sad, but this is how we are going to work towards getting better over it. I think they'll then remember and tie it to that event. And that's something that they'll remember, as opposed to just treating it like a class or something or a lecture, because no kid wants to be lectured and sat down. They're going to be looking at their phone or looking the other way and saying, get me out of here. But I think when you're dealing with something in the moment, and then you're able to bring that on top of it, and they'll be able to use it.
Sure. Cool. So is there anything else specifically about the book that you would like to discuss?
I think the one thing, and this is just the way the book's structured, and this is the framework that I put together based on the people who I interviewed, their stories and the ideas for the readers to go and use it and apply it to their own lives, was this idea of the invent framework, which is just a framework that doesn't need to be taken in any ordered steps, but that is used to overcome adversity and then go on to pursue entrepreneurship or professional success. And it's based off the teachings in the book. So the first one is to establish identity. So figure out who you are, what you stand for, your values, your belief systems, your interests, just what you want to be known for and put out into the world. Because like I mentioned with the confidence piece in the beginning, you need to be confident in yourself and project yourself outwardly before anyone else that you meet is going to believe in you or take you seriously. The N is develop your nerve. So the idea of just building up a pain tolerance. I know Elon Musk, and he's one of the people that I researched in the book who was bullied. I unfortunately did not get a chance to interview him, but there's a lot of information out there already on his story. But he says, if you want to start a business, my biggest recommendation would be to have a high pain tolerance. And so just getting familiar with pain and getting familiar with adversity. So develop your nerve. The V is to visualize your goals. And that chapter really talks about the law of attraction and manifestation and vision boarding and just goal setting and driving towards progress. The E is engage with others. And that talks about the emotional intelligence aspect that I mentioned came from the bullying and just the importance of emotional intelligence in life and in business and interacting with other people, since we are such social beings. The N, the second N, is embrace the now, which focuses on the idea that right now we have so much technology at our disposal. It's never been easier to start a business, to start a podcast, to start a TV show, whatever it is, and just how to take advantage of that and use the technology for a positive as opposed to the negatives that we were talking about in cyberbullying. And then the T, and it's the last one, and this is the one that had a big impact on my life, and I think can on other people as well, is, have you ever read the book The Third Door, or have you heard of the book The Third
Door? Yeah, by Alex Manion.
Yeah, Alex Manion. He's the youngest international best-selling author, I think, ever. And his idea, he wrote The Third Door book, where he went and interviewed and had the chance to interview some of the world's biggest people of every industry, Bill Gates, Steven Spielberg, Jessica Alba, Sugar Ray Leonard, just so many different people, and condensed all of their advice and everything else into a great story and book. And his idea was the third door framework. So he viewed life as a nightclub. You had the first door where everyone waits online to get in, and they wait hours and hours, and it might be at capacity and you're just there. Then you have the second line, which is for the VIPs and the celebrities and the people with money who they just lift up the rope and you go on in. And then they have the third door, which is where people take the risks and the unconventional scrappy methods to jump over the fence or sneak in through the back window or bang on the back door and have someone let them in. And what he found was that all of these super successful people ended up taking the third door and doing something scrappy and unconventional in order to get in whatever industry or field that they ended up becoming successful in. So this last chapter talks about how to build up the confidence to find your own third door moment and take that risk, whether it be entrepreneurial or something else. So I think that framework is just something that people, and I'm from who have read it, and when I go to speak, people come up to me and try to apply it to their own lives and have found some success with that.
Cool. And then, yeah, I guess I'd just like to ask a bit more about like how you marketed your book, because I'm quite interested in authors and getting success. I'm writing a book myself, and it'd be quite fascinating to learn some top tips around, you know, editing and getting an audience.
Editing wise, I worked with a bunch of, I had a developmental editor, a copy editor, cover editor, I had a layout editor, and this was all through the program called the Creator Institute, which was headed up by a professor at Georgetown University, a university stateside in Washington, D.C. And he worked with a bunch of college students and adults and has his own independent publishing press and just works them through the structure of creating books. So this was initially offered as a college course at Georgetown, and then he spun it off into other people because he had so much success. So I met him at that same event that I was talking about, the entrepreneurship event.
So that's kind of part of what ended up with you writing it.
Exactly. Unlike traditional publishers where you'll have an agent and the publisher will promote your book and take a cut, they don't do any marketing for you. So on one hand, that's great because you have all your royalties, but at the same time, it's on you to get the press out there. So since launch, I was doing a lot of cold emailing to press like Inc., Newsweek, Entrepreneur, Forbes, Psychology Today, all these different outlets, freelance journalists and journalists with them, and made a press kit and sent that out and sent them copies of the books, very similar to the way I reached out to you. And of course, you need to have a good product because I'm sure they get thousands of submissions a day. But also the power of a targeted cold email is really special as well if you write it right. And so for me, I had great success with that and was able to land a bunch of press, a bunch of podcast appearances, speaking gigs off from the cold email. And certain press outlets, depending, you see the name and you think, oh, the name, and it carries so much credibility. You know, like you see Forbes and you're like, holy crap, it's Forbes. But at the same time, it really depends who's writing the article for you. And this is something I learned after, because you could have a small guest writer on Forbes who only gets 2,000 views on their article, or you could be on a random blog that has like a really religious readership of, I'm making it up, 50,000 views an article. And that blog is going to have a lot higher ROI than in terms of actual sales or opportunities after. Then that being said,
like if you get the one on Forbes, it's easy to just put it in your like link of like, oh, and you should probably have me on your site because I was on Forbes.
Sites like that build the social credibility. So I think it's a good marriage to try to target some of the bigger publications to build that social credibility where like you can go and say, hey, check out my feature in Inc., check out my feature in Forbes, put it on your website. Sure. But then also if you had a targeted, for me, like a bullying blog, for example, that the guy only writes about bullying, but all the parents and all the kids go to that nonprofit or that blog and they're posting about your book, that's really powerful as well. So as far as marketing strategies for book goes, I think just be strategic and as strategic as possible. And then also take time to plan it out. Like if I could go back and do it all over again, I would have spent 6 months prior to my launch. It only took me like a little over a year to write the book, but I would have spent 6 months prior leading up to planning press for the launch as opposed to launching it and then trying to go and plan everything just because stuff always takes longer than it seems.
Definitely. Interesting. Yeah, thanks. Very insightful.
I know you said you wanted to write a book. So if you have
definitely
in that, I can hook you up with the guy who did it because he works with like, I think he's working with like 500 authors this year.
Wow.
Pretty young and first-time authors.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Definitely look into that. Nice. Okay. So I guess the last few questions are, what is one of your earliest memories?
One of my earliest memories that ironically ties into entrepreneurship was I was 4 years old and my dad, as a side hustle, is photography. He loves nature photography and he'll sell his pictures. And we used to go to craft fairs in our area all the time. And I would help him mount the pictures. I would help run the booth and help sell them for him. And that was one of my first memories of business. And one of the things that I always fell in love with growing up was we would spend our weekends going to these craft shows and art fairs. And just he'd pay to have a little tent and we'd set everything up. And that was something that always stuck with me. And I think probably had like a subconscious influence on my desire to also be entrepreneurial.
Cool. Nice. And then what's the kindest thing that someone's done for you? And you can't just say bullying.
No. This is just recent that has come to mind. I do work a full-time job still. One of the kindest things is when people in general will take a chance on you without knowing you as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could grow up with someone for 15 years and you have formed this really great relationship, this strong tie relationship. So by nature, you both care about each other. You're going to do kind things for each other. But I think the most impactful to me are when you have the weak tie relationships and someone just out of the blue might see something in you or take a liking to you and then do this act of kindness. So most recently, I was at one job and the company wasn't doing too well and my situation at the company wasn't great. And I had a very weak tie relationship with one of the other employees, a higher up manager, and she was in the learning and development aspect of the firm. And so she was responsible for training and recruiting and everything else that went along with that. And we just sat down and had a really in-depth conversation actually about it. So happened by her reading my book and relating to it and wanting to sit down. And that started this whole relationship. And she just took it upon herself, since she knew I was unhappy at the initial job, to start to help me look for other jobs and put massive recommendations out for me on my behalf after only knowing me for however it was 30 days. And she was actually played a pretty important part in me landing my next job. So I think that was one of the kindest things someone had done to me, just taking the chance on me and putting their 25-year career reputation on the line for a kid that they met 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, after just having one or two conversations, and then actually using that influence, like you mentioned, and everything else to help me land a job, I think was really kind and powerful.
Yeah, it's nice. It's great when some humans really show up.
Yeah.
When people do that, like, you grow a lot more yourself though as well. It's not often as risky as it seems, because you kind of feel like, yeah, I've got to really do well for this person because they've put themselves out for me.
Yeah,
it's really nice. It's reciprocal.
It also makes you want to pay it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I feel obligated, not with just her, but just with anyone. Someone comes to pay it back, you know.
Same. This is why I like asking this question, because it's just a very inspiring to hear, like, tales of kindness, and it provides like a trigger to sort of do the kind things. So when like this opportunity comes up, you realize it for what it is, as an opportunity. When like someone I don't know that well is like asking me for something, I'm like, wait, this is a chance I can be really awesome right now and like be nice to this person. Which you maybe just don't normally notice. So it just seems like some random person asking something. You're like, hey, I can show up right now. Sweet. Yep. And like, it's good to be reminded of these things. We should talk more about like nice things, I feel.
Definitely. I agree. Totally, I agree.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show and talking about the book. And I hope it grows and that you do more entrepreneurial things and writing things. And I'm sure you're going to go places.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on.
No worries.
I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. My goal for this podcast is to help make people happier and wiser, and I'm also working on a few other projects in the podcasting space to achieve the same thing. I run the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with a friend, where we read and discuss a great non-fiction book a week. We talk about things like philosophy, psychology, the economy, self-improvement, and business. Books such as The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, Invisible Women, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a great resource. I also run the Curious Comforts podcast, finding out what's going on in the world and how to improve it with industry insiders. We've been focusing on the effects of the coronavirus lately, but I also discuss broader things like climate change and AI. Most recently, I've been building an app, Syncify. It's really to level up your podcast experience. You can connect with your friends in the app and listen to the same things. So you can listen live in real time with each other, or create shared playlists and catch up at your own pace. You learn so much more by discussing ideas with friends. It's really silly to listen alone. You can also discover and share brilliant episodes with ease without having to try and recommend podcasts in different apps and just it all getting lost and confused. So it's also good for combating isolation and mental health. I personally find social media quite antisocial, and I just don't find it easy to reach out to friends to chat for no real reason. But I do love doing things with other people, and listening to the same content means that I can naturally talk about the same things, and it just gives me that friend time without going out of my way. So I really hope that it can help you, and I just would love you to try out the beta version and help us build this. And obviously, do invite your friends. It's all about friends. So you can find out more about Syncify app by going to syncifyapp.com. Thanks for listening.
Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.